Welcome to OC Housing Connection Program, Orange County's number one trusted resource for all your real estate and home mortgage news. Here are your hosts, Hamid and Faye Hamadachi.
Hello, everyone. We hope you had a fun and relaxing weekend. Let's get started today by talking about the state of real estate. I'm here with my co-host, Faye, and as well as our sound engineer, Paul.
Everybody's so buried in their smart devices, they almost forgot to put the mics in front of them.
I know. We need the smart devices to be able to see what we're doing. It's kind of like part of our body, I think. I want to say.
You know, yeah. It's an extension of ourselves.
Exactly. So, anyway, prices are still going up, and inventory is still low, and Faye is going to tell us about interest rates. And
well, we had a little move upwards last week. When I say a little, we've been like an eighth or a quarter.
You mean in the mortgage rates,
In the mortgage rates. And the reason was that the Fed came out and said there may be a possibility that we're going to raise the rate.
Yeah. They seemed pretty sure that they were going to almost.
Right. In the last, in fact, on, was it May 18th, I was reading in an article about them, and it seems that they're thinking of raising the rates, although they're not sure about it. That's part of the issue. Remember, in December, they were talking about 4 rate hikes this coming year. And beginning of the year, they were all gung-ho that this is where we're going to go, and we're going to raise the rates and so on.
They did it once, everybody got mad.
Exactly. And then the first rate they did for a couple of months, there was a little bit of panic in the market.
Well, it wasn't that everybody got mad, because the economy is slowing down. So when you lower the rates, you're not helping it. So it's not that they would have raised it more if they could. I think they haven't, because there is no justification.
But in the last couple of weeks, I want to say, every Fed official within the range of microphone, they have indicated that there's a good possibility that the rate hikes may come sooner than later.
Well, why don't we just look and see what's coming out this week? Okay, so number one is the...
Then I got a question for you. I'm going to ask the hard penetrating question.
This Friday, there's going to be a gross domestic product. The GDP number will show what the corporate profit data would be.
For the last quarter.
For the last quarter of the year. The after-tax profit fell 8.1% in the last quarter of the year. What does that mean, basically? If businesses are not making money, they're not making profit. So they weren't doing that. It actually dropped by 8.1%. So we're going to see what's going on.
This is across the board. How far, when they track corporations, is it the top 1,000 or the certain industries or indicators? They can't track every business. They didn't ask me how my business is going.
Well, maybe you're under the radar.
That's what I'm saying. So at some point, I don't know exactly.
I think they're thinking about manufacturing. Probably that's what they're mainly talking about.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, there's also the consumer sentiment coming out, mm-hmm. University of Michigan, which
Go Blue,
yes. I'm sure you guys...
Very excited about that.
Yeah. And then there is also the Fed
Chairman
would be speaking on Friday, which is very important. That's going to be the highlight.
Now, let me backtrack. The consumer sentiment, that's basically telling us what the consumers are thinking, correct? It's about...
How they're feeling. It's not
right.
about...
Do they feel...
I feel
upbeat.
Good. I feel scared.
Exactly. Do they feel upbeat, you know?
Going in the right direction, going in the wrong direction.
Because that sentiment makes a big difference, whether you...
Well, it decides whether you buy something. Am I going to go spend this money or not? Do I feel safe or not?
Well, at the end of the day, the only really bright spot in the economy right now is the housing and the consumer somewhat. The consumer is still spending, but not the way they used to spend. So they're also on Friday, Federal Chairman Yellen would speak and discuss her outlook. And then there's the Department Durable Goods report will also come out on Thursday of this week. So there's a lot of data coming up.
So here's my penetrating question. Cut through all that. Does the Fed, at its heart, want to raise rates or not want to raise rates? And if so, why? I have my own theory.
Why don't you tell us your theory?
All right.
I want to hear your theory.
We have a financial show that talks about this a lot as well, because it affects the market rates. And many people have the two theories. One theory is they're afraid of inflation, and so they have to have some way to slow the economy down a little bit, some brakes on it, because they're afraid it's going to take off at some point, although it hasn't. I say the reason is, just as several people have said in the financial show, they want to raise rates because they know bad times are coming. It's been over, the stock market correction's way overdue, if nothing else. And if they can't lower rates, then they got nothing to do when bad things happen. So I know you don't want to hear this, folks. I know it maybe isn't the right time to do it, but we got to get those rates back up so we can, when the real big thing happens, we can cut them.
Paul, if things are working and the way it should be, raising rate actually causes a hiccup in the economy.
Which it already did, because when they raised the rate last time, it actually...
And I'm not quite sure.
But the theory is that whether or not they'll take the short-term hiccup, they got to get some leverage because they're convinced there is a bigger crisis coming, be it China, Europe, or whatnot, or just an overdue stock correction, and they've got to be able to cut rates at that moment to step in and save it from getting worse.
Keep something in mind. If the rates are low and things are not working and we're hitting a bump, cutting them back down again would get us back where we are now and still not would work.
But their theory is it isn't horrible right now. It's still positive growth slowly. We haven't gone into recession. We haven't been in negative growth. So sorry you want it to take off. Sorry you don't want to hear a short-term bump. But if we can raise the rates now and everybody will accept it and not crash the economy, then we'll have some tools in our tool chest when the big problem, which we see coming, we don't know when, but we think it's coming.
You know, I was reading an article, and I think it's important with this discussion. It's about the rates. It's about the employment. And it talks about how the temporary workers, you know, many companies now, they don't go hire. They hire through the temp agencies.
Right.
Because it's cheaper for you. And because if you have to let go people, it's how that's slowing down. And when that slows down, it's really a sign of recession coming, because we're back down the temp sector has shed 27,400 jobs since December.
Not just because they're hiring permanent and feeling safe, but because they're just already cutting back on workers.
Yes,
so
it's where we were back like in 2009. It was talking about it. I don't have all the data with me right now, but it's kind of interesting because we've had a soft employment report in the the last one was quite soft, and this is also another indication that...
And many people feel that the more liberalized, or maybe liberalized is the wrong word, but the new labor laws that are going to expand at what point you get overtime, they've changed the number, so they're going to say, well, that's going to affect how many people I hire full-time anyway. If it's going to be easier for more people to get overtime now than it ever has been.
Right, that changed last week, I believe.
And therefore, then maybe I don't want as many full-time employees. But again, I bring this up because it's an important point, I think, to this discussion. Every week we talk about it's going to go up or go down because it worries about housing. I say whether or not the reports are good or bad, they want to raise rates. That's my theory. That's what I'm hearing other people say. And so they're committed to raising rates.
I do agree with you. They want to, but they're just having a difficulty justifying it.
But rather than reacting, as Hamid says, why don't they just look at where it is, and when it needs to, we'll raise the rates. But for right now, why raise them? Nothing's wrong.
Now, one of the things actually that Fed is considering, historically, unemployment and inflation were related.
If
the unemployment was high, usually we had low inflation, etc.
Right.
They're actually questioning that now. The few discussions they've had, they've been talking about that, and they're not quite sure if these two are so related as they thought before. Hmm. Because right now, we're almost at where we would call full employment. I know it's 5.1%, but that's what generally...
Yeah, it never goes to zero, because there's always some people leaving, some people coming.
Federal Reserve wants it to be anywhere from 4 to 5%.
Right.
And we are there right now, but they don't see the signs of inflation. Whereas generally, if we were there, we would see gradual price increases and so on.
And I've heard that theory for a year or two now. Inflation's coming, scared of inflation, haven't seen it in a long time. As things get better, can't get it too far, can't let it heat up too good to get into inflation.
Right.
Yet, I'm hearing, and that was why they're holding this interest rate theory back, and they might raise interest rates to keep as a break to prevent them from happening. But if this new idea is right, then they're going to raise them, whatever the economic reports are, whatever the economy is, just because they feel they need to have leverage for a bigger problem, which, of course, they can't come out and admit, hey, we're headed for a big problem, because then that would create it.
Exactly. And also, they have two other reasons for wanting to increase the rate. Number one is when the rates are low, it encourages risky financial behavior. We can see that. You know, if you can borrow money at 2% and do something versus you have to pay 8%, you may do more riskier things. And risky investment can cause financial crisis later on. So that's one of the concerns they have. The second thing is credibility. They feel that they've been talking about raising rates so much or not raising it and so on, and everybody is expecting it. If they don't do it now, it's actually they're going to lose credibility. And I can see that happening.
Once, like Obama in Syria, once you say you're going to do it, you better
do it. Exactly. Now, there are some arguments. You know, number one is about runaway inflation. And based on the numbers that we're getting, we don't see that much of an inflation.
No, that seems to be a no-show. That's why the
feds are hesitant. You know, we don't have inflation. Things seem to be working. Do we really need to raise the rates to cause a problem?
Well, there's also the conference, like on Thursday, the leaders from the 7 leading countries, they're getting together in Japan. No, I think more and more, I think we need to point out it's not just about us. It's not just about what the economy is doing in the United States.
It's not just about us?
It's not just about us. I have news for you.
When did that happen?
You know, China, the European.
We got to make America great again, then. It's got to be just about us.
It doesn't matter, because as great as we are, we're not the world, and we depend on the world economy.
I hate that.
So, and we do trades with the world, so it's like, you know, China is not doing well. You know, they're flip-flopping in their policy. I was reading an article today about how their central bank, you know, just wants they want to stop fighting the financial market and let the currency fall on its own.
Ooh, but that looks bad politically when your currency falls.
Well, but because the government actually controls that in China.
I know. They don't want the look of the currency falling. We're currency rising all the time. We're stronger.
Well, they can't figure out, you know, they want to stop it. There's a lot of money that's fleeing China.
Yeah, we've talked about that last week.
So this is all, like, I think it's all just like a jigsaw puzzle. It's not just about our side of the world. You know, everything we do is, like, it's interconnected. So it's as much as we want to raise the rate and as much as we want to say we're doing great,
Donald Trump wants to stop, but we got to start taking control of this. We're in charge. We tell them what
please.
To do.
Well, I'm going.
Remember,
you're going somewhere else.
No, I'm going to Canada when he comes over.
Remember something? We talked about that last week, Faye, when you were away. And the main thing is, if the rates are risen and they go up higher, there are two problems. Number one, people want more dollars, because let's say they pay 5% at the bank. That means everybody wants to get dollars to put their money in the bank to get paid more.
Right.
That causes the dollar to go up, which causes problem for our exports. Now our exports costing more, which means the manufacturers and the exporters have to cut back, because now it costs more to sell the same products. So,
well, our manufacturer is doing terrible right now.
No, I'm talking about general manufacturing that we're selling. Our exports are doing very well now.
Because Obama's been pushing that silently for a long time. I don't know why he doesn't tout that all the time, but he wanted to double the American exports in his two terms of office. He's pretty close to that.
And we're doing pretty good, actually. Remember, I mean, you know about euro. We've been buying euro and dollars for a long time. It used to be almost 1.6 euro dollars to a euro. Now it's close to one. It's not quite one. It's about 1.1 now.
Which means this is a good time to take a vacation in Europe.
Yeah,
exactly.
Let's go.
And vice versa. So if somebody wants to buy an American product, it's cheaper for them now.
Is it cheaper or more expensive if dollar is dollar is cheaper now?
Exactly.
Yeah. So they don't want, the stronger the dollar gets, right?
They don't want the dollar to be strong, because it will cause our exports to fall, which causes further unemployment. That's one reason. The second thing is the government owes a lot of money that they have to pay back. If the rates rises, they have to pay with higher interest rates.
So yeah, it's not the beneficial. Current debt.
Exactly.
It's not beneficial for the government because the government also owes a lot of money. They're the bigger debtors. Bigger than you and I, Paul.
So why? That's hard to believe. So how does – I got lots of debt. So how does – no, actually, I don't anymore. I wiped it all out. Why doesn't Obama invite Yellen over, give her a little schmooze talk, and say, knock it off? I think this is what's so crazy.
But he can't.
They're doing it. They may not meet face to face, but they have to coordinate the policy making altogether. Right. And I think it's been done pretty good. Since Obama has been in the office last 8 years, he has pushed for bigger exports. And we see the dollar
huge.
Being,
I was going to ask you, I don't know if this relates, this is a far-fetched, see how this affects housing, but we just opened up normalized rations with Vietnam. Well, we had normalized
Cuba.
And Cuba. And we ever did a show a while ago on Malaysia, another one that's opening up. These are markets, Burma, that have been completely off bounds for American business. In his last few years, he's opened up all three of those, and businesses are starting to go look at what is the economic opportunity and growth in those three markets.
And then, you know, there's another market that we're going to
Iran. So here we've got this potential to suddenly get this big floodgate of open export business if we want it, if we can compete for it. And to Hamid's point, if we raise the dollar, that'll price us out of that business.
And the other thing is inflation. For the last 4 years, it's been running around
2%. Less than
2%. So the Fed doesn't have any cause to try to push the inflation down. It's already where it is.
Right.
We've been talking about deflation for a while.
Yeah,
so it's
right.
not. We don't really have a problem with inflation. We've had more problem with deflation than inflation.
So my theory is whether or not they want to do it, and they're going to do it as soon as they can, just because they think there's a bigger crisis coming, and they want to have some clout at that point.
I think it's a very convoluted.
I disagree. Actually, I don't think it's going to happen till probably September. Depending what happens between now and September.
Nothing in June, then, despite all these noise they're making.
If you already have the inflation where it is, and remember something, it's much easier to control the inflation than the other way around.
I know, but my argument, again, I'll make one last pitch, is this is not based on short-term logic. This is based on long-term strategy. They think they need it as insurance in the bank when the big... If China falls apart, when the stock market recorrects, all this stuff. Here.
Right. But, Paul, like I said, if everything is working now, and then they raise the rates so that in case something happens, they can lower it.
Right.
And imagine that thing happens. We lower it back to where we are now. If that solves the problem, not raising it may just...
The reality is where we're at now ain't that bad.
Exactly, and it might not cause that problem.
Well, you got to keep something in mind, too. Like, the LIBOR index is about 0.6 higher than
this
it was.
London like something index.
London, Interbank.
Interbank, yeah.
Basically, why do we care? It's actually London Interbank Offered Rate.
There you go.
Now, why do we care if that goes?
All these loans got tied to LIBOR a long time
ago. There's a lot of
loans
out there that we're still carrying from back early 2000 where loans are tied to the LIBOR index. Now, a 0.6 increase in LIBOR index means everybody that holds those loans are paying about 0.5% higher, too. So,
are there caps on LIBOR in the same way that there are?
No, there is no cap on the index. There's a cap when you get a mortgage. There's a cap on your interest rate.
Right.
But, most caps says you can go up 2% a year. So if you had an adjustable loan last year, you're probably paying about when you have your adjustment, you pay an average of 0.5% higher than last year. Which means, what does that mean? There are many people that still haven't been able to get out of those loans. They're not bad loans, On average, they're paying 3 to 3.5%.
Yeah, Hamid said we all raced to get out of them, and maybe some of us should have stayed in them.
Some people couldn't qualify to get out of them.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people that are on these loans, a lot of jumbo loans too. The people have stayed on these loans because they couldn't qualify to come out of it. And you don't sweat it when you're paying 3% and you can't qualify.
Even though they had a lifetime cap of 10 or 11 or 8 or something, they were that's never hit that because it didn't.
I know, but the lifetime of 8, 9, 10% and you're paying 3%, that means your payment is going to be three times as much. And I can assure you, many people will not be able to afford it. Even a half a percent or a 1% is going to put the squeeze on few people.
Ran a report, as they do from time to time, and they asked people, if you had a $500 or $1,000 emergency tomorrow, could you handle it? And a shocking number of people, I don't know what it was, like 50% or something.
70%.
70% said, I got to pay $1,000 tomorrow? No, I'm in trouble.
It's unfortunate, but a lot of people are like that part. I remember back when we were paying our people with checks and it wasn't direct deposit, and it was Fridays and I had to sign the checks. I couldn't miss Fridays. It would call havoc at the office, seriously. Yeah. And I used to tell them, can't you wait till Monday? I'll be here. No, we can't. So a lot of people are like that, actually.
Yeah, right. So all of this is on a razor's edge here again. If rates go up, if interest rates go up, if the economy dips a little bit, there's an awful lot of people that are going to start hurting.
Let me read a paragraph from Fed's economic staff.
Okay.
It actually says, the risk to the forecast for real GDP were seen as tilted towards the downside, reflecting the staff's assessment that neither monetary nor fiscal policy was well positioned to help the economy withstand substantial adverse shocks. In addition, while there had been recent improvements in global financial and economic condition, the downside risks to the forecast from developments abroad, remained. Consistent with the downside risk to the aggregate demand, the staff viewed the risk to the outlook for the unemployment rate as skewed to the upside. So they think the unemployment rate is going to go up, but they're still concerned about those effects happening abroad and how it's going to affect us.
And the key sentence in there, I'm trying to remember to quote it, to me is, they didn't think monetary and fiscal policy was well positioned.
Exactly.
Sounds to me like code, like we better get positioned. We better have some ammunition if something goes
wrong. Exactly, which means they're not quite sure what they're doing is what it's supposed to be.
Whether they got enough leverage built in, but through interest rates, they can cut back again.
Exactly, and we talked about negative interest rate last week, Paul. Remember?
Yeah. Nobody in this country ever even acknowledges or talks about in Europe. That's a growing phenomenon, but I never hear Obama say, "Yeah, let's have our
Fair,
Trump."
You
say.
Weren't here last week. We talked about it. Portugal and Spain, I think, have negative interest rates.
Let's go negative.
Basically, the banks are worried. But they're fighting the consumer.
But negative interest rate exists in a few. Was it in Iceland?
Denmark has it. But many people in Portugal and Spain have adjustable rates, which if they go by their index now, it should go below. The banks are arguing that we shouldn't actually go to negative interest rate. We should stop at zero.
Right.
But then the contract says otherwise, and the consumer people are getting together trying to force this with the banks.
Yeah, they're saying, hey.
Wasn't there like a real estate like a bust also in Spain?
Because in almost all of Europe.
All of Europe.
When the easy money was available, yes. And just like what I said before, when the interest rates are low, people make,
crazy ideas.
You know, it was interesting. I was reading an article about Australia, where Australia, somebody was doing like a, they're having like a, they're probably going to have a bust in their real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying that their bank is actually in trouble because of a lot of bad debts. And some guy just did some survey, like he pretending to be a buyer and, same thing we had in U.S. and they were talking about the Bank of Australia having problems too. So,
but as we're seeing in the rest of the country, rest of the world, nobody even entertains that idea. You've never heard any politician. I've never heard any politician say, "Well, maybe we'll go to negative interest rates. Maybe the banks won't make money loaning you money anymore. In fact, they almost have to pay you money to take a loan out. And the only way they make money is by charging service fees to all this."
That would be so nice in America because the banks are making tons of money right now. They know what I'm talking about. The rate that they borrow money is almost zero, and then they lend it to you about 4%, 4.5%.
Now they're going to charge you for you leaving your money in their bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that fantastic?
Exactly. You got to pay them in order to park it there, and then they take it and reloan it to somebody and make a wide spread on it.
Exactly.
And that's if they really actually were conservative and did it correctly,
yeah, right.
You know.
Yeah,
they exactly. could go, like, buy right. some things that...
Yeah.
So.
Horse farms. And
Horse farms.
Yeah. All right. So I think we're almost done here for that section. Any final points you want to make on the economy here? Nobody, Hamid,
there's
pushed
three
back.
Things that are going to happen. It's going to go up or down or stay the same.
Well, no, I think we're going to be the same. I think the rates are going to stay
I'm
low. And hopefully,
what are you going to say?
I'm going to say, you watch. They're committed now. I'm beginning to become a believer in this. It has nothing to do with what's really happening. They want to see rates go up because they see darker days ahead, and they want to be prepared.
So, my advice to the buyers looking out there: move, make a move, buy your home. You never get the rates this low again. If the rates go up, then you'd be, you know, thinking, oh, wow, yeah. I wish I had...
And, you know, that's an interesting point because on our financial show, they talked about this. Everybody laughingly says, if you ask any financial guy, what's your best advice? Like we do every week on the Strategic Investor Show. And they all kiddingly say, well, okay, buy low, sell high. Duh. Everybody's supposed to do that. Why doesn't it work that way? There are people now, one guy was saying that they're tracking sentiment. People are starting to get back into the market again after all these years of being out of it. That, more than anything, tells you that we've hit the peak. When people start actually jumping in, that's when it's about ready to blow up because we all seem to wait too long. We buy high and sell low.
Exactly.
And yet, so again, if you're really thinking about real estate and the time, everything screaming seems to say buy now, later will only be tougher. More expensive, higher rates.
When we come
whatever.
Back, actually, I have an article about the homeownership rates, so we could talk about it.
All right, we'll do that and more right after this.
Take a break, we'll be right back.
Successfully navigating the changing world of public relations and digital marketing requires an experienced, tenacious, yet gracious team. In business for more than 20 years, Orange County-based TN Company delivers big agency results with personalized service. For more information, call us at 714-536-8407 or visit us online at tnco.me.
Wow. Marketing predictions are out for 2015, and marketing success is changing. Did you know that Google is now actively tracking your business and personal brand and online reputation? Online and offline marketing has changed. Google is driving more than 85% of your traffic. And if your brand is inconsistent or has poor mobile usability, your rankings and traffic can suffer in 2015. To learn how your business is currently viewed and what can be done to improve your brand's visibility and authority, contact SunUp Group for a free marketing analysis. It could be a business game changer. Visit www.sunupgroup.com today or call 877-609-3840, extension 700.
All right, we're back.
All right.
Let's talk about homeownership. This is homeownership and your college degree, and I thought this was very, very interesting. And I'm just going to give you some stats.
Okay.
Now, if you are a college graduate between 18 and 34 and you graduated college without debt, it will take you 5 years to afford the 20% saving. You would have to save for 5 years to get your 20%.
Assuming you can come out and get a job, all that stuff.
You're a college grad that came out with student loan, you need to save for 10 years before you can afford to buy a
home. Wow. Big difference.
Now, if you don't have a college degree, it's going to take you 15 and a half years.
Oh, boy.
Now, if you're a college grad, and they also did a survey to see, you know, whether you could get helps from family, friends and family. Now, if you're a college grad without student, you could get an average of $8,000 in help from friends and family.
Without student debt.
Without student debt.
Right.
You know, you got to think about the logic. If you don't have student debt, you probably have parents that helps you get there.
That makes sense, yeah.
So you do get more help for down payment. Now, if you're a college grad with debt, the average you could get $4,000. Now, if you're don't have any college degree, average, you could probably get about $2,000 from friends and family.
It has to do with if your parents had money, they paid for it. If they didn't have money, you borrowed it. And if you didn't have the right environment, you didn't go. And all of that means you're on a lower economic curve here.
This is average. Now, they looked at San Jose, California, which is the second largest city after San Francisco. You have a wild guess. If you don't have a college degree and you live in San Jose, how many years do you have to save to get your 20%?
212.
It's a little bit less than that. It's like you could be a lifetime. Yeah. 48 years.
48 years, same thing.
How about Austin? What would you say? Because Austin is cheaper. What would you say? Any guess?
If it was 48... I have no idea. Because Austin is the big tech center, so it's probably more expensive than other places. But Texas across the board is about half of what we are. So
23 years.
Okay, so it's half.
And it's 8 years for students with debt and 4 years for a grad student without debt.
The rich are going to get richer, and the poor, they're going to stay poor. They're not going to get homes. They're not going to have equity appreciation. They're not going to have the same connection that...
It talks about how when you go to college, it's not just about learn. I mean, you learn to think better so you can save better, and you also can, manage your finances better, too. That's they were talking part of the article about it. So it's not just about... And you do make less money when you don't go to college. You know, you are going to get paid less. So it all works hands in hands.
Wow. Okay. So we're talking about another reason why the millennials ain't buying homes, because they're either coming out with debt and they're got to wait 15 years to...
48 years.
48 years if it's in a nice area.
And that's in San Jose, which is second largest, most expensive city in America after San Francisco.
Yes. So.
Wow. All right. So, and then it goes back to the real question, which was what we debated in the 80s. Do we want Americans to own homes? Does it create a better corporate citizen? Do they have more stake in the economy? Do they become more conservative in their spending habits? Are they more invested in their community?
I think it's yes to a little bit of everything, Paul. For example, in a neighborhood where people are homeowners, homes are kept up better.
Yeah, crime is lower.
Exactly. So there are benefits to home ownership. Plus, you got to pay a place to live in, whether it's rent or mortgage. So you might as well pay a mortgage, and at the end of some period of time, at least you have built up equity.
Right. Well, I know when you go to purchase a property and it's a condo, we have to basically always approve the project. So one of the things we always ask is, what's the percentage of homeowners versus, renters in there? And if it's less than 50%, you're going to have a problem getting a mortgage in there. So
makes sense. Not going to be taken care of. Renters don't care about the property.
Which leads me to believe when you are in a neighborhood where the majority of people own their home, people tend to keep it up better. You know, you care about your home a little bit more, how it looks, how the outside looks.
But we're talking about macroeconomic trends here today. It seems to be our topic of the day here. And I'm going to be the bomb thrower. I'm going to ask the hard question again. I say the Fed has an underlying reason to want to raise rates, regardless of what the economy is doing, because they think bigger things are coming. I think that the Fed has been burned on this notion of everybody, as many people as possible should own homes. That's what led to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and loaning people who shouldn't have gotten loans, and the whole thing blew up. It was a culmination of 20 years federal policy to try and encourage home ownership, and I wonder if that hasn't been cut back.
I disagree with you a little bit on that.
Good.
I don't think the Fed's policy was that at all. They never had this policy of home ownership for people.
Maybe of the federal government.
The federal government.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'll go with that.
Yeah. The Fed actually plans their policy based on the economy, where it's going, how is it going, is it getting there the way we want it to get there. And an example is the 2% inflation rate.
Right, and the Federal Reserve didn't say, let's create Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and
now,
encourage
having
home ownership.
Said that, if you go back to our previous, before Mr. Bernanke, Alan Greenspan, he had different beliefs in terms of interest rates. He believed that we can have the interest rates as low as possible for as long as possible. And he believed that would help the economy by having people more buy homes, cheaper homes, and the economy keeps growing.
Yeah, he really started the drop in rates.
He was the one actually who.
I'm going to come in, interject here, because, yeah, you know, this is my subject to talk about when
That's
it comes.
Right.
You know, it's not so much, you know, there was a policy for more, you know, people owning their home, but that's not where we failed. We failed because we did not use the same checks and balances that we've always had in the mortgage industry. Mm-hmm. You know, for as long, you know, I've been in this business for 25 years, and there was a period between, I want to say, 2006 to 2007 and 8, where people had just gone, their brain had gone to vacation.
Yeah.
You know, we've always have, you know, you always have to, you know, understand whether that person has the actual ability to repay you.
Right.
But that was like, that was non-existent during that time period. So it wasn't that, yes, they were, you know, it is, but if you do it correctly, it shouldn't happen. What happened before should not happen.
But if you have a stated federal policy under both Republicans and Democrats, and a general consensus within the political community that we're going to do everything we can to make it easier to borrow money, doesn't that lead to abuse at some point?
Exactly. That always, anytime you have cheap money, people take risky investments.
I agree.
Yeah, but if you qualify people like you always did, because, you know, Fannie Mae worked up to 2007.
Yes.
Fannie Mae had the right tools, and it's obviously after they stopped doing the crazy stuff that they did for that three years, they're still working. So it's not that the institution or the logic behind it doesn't work. It's just that people abused it. There was a period of time where the government had gone to sleep.
Think of it this way, though. If I agree what you're saying, they took off some of the checks and balances, and that's what caused it, yes. But at the same time, imagine we have interest rates of 4% versus 2%. Many times you're willing to make investments on that 2% because it's such a cheap money, versus 4%. That doesn't make sense anymore.
Well, think a little harder.
Well, I'm
going
to talk to you as a lender. To me, it's all about your ratio. When I give you a loan at 2%, you can afford more of a loan.
So you make risky investments.
It's not risky. It's the same guide that I follow. If you have a debt-to-income ratio of 44...
But he's saying the sentiment of the borrower is what the heck? I'll roll the dice. It's only 2%.
Exactly. And so when the rates are low, I'm not just talking about real estate. I'm talking about overall economy. People make risky investments, mainly because it's cheaper to do it. You know,
has the federal policy. Nobody said anymore. Nobody talks about it's a federal policy where we're going to try and increase homeownership anymore. That I never heard that as a kid in the 60s. But that was starting with, I'd say, about Clinton and then into the Bushes.
Clinton was the one actually who pushed it.
Let's push this idea because people will be more responsible. They'll be more invested in the community. Crime will go down. All these good things will happen. And so they started loosening the requirements to borrow money, encouraging ways for other people to get homes.
Right now, they're not loosening the requirement for you to get a mortgage.
No, I'm saying so. It's gone the other way. And that means then you're going to see more people who live in San Jose who will never own a home. Effectively, it takes you 48 years to save it. You're not going to do it. We're going to end up with a apartment-dwelling society like they do in New York and a few other places. And we've talked about could be here in Orange County as well. What does that do to everything if you've got a chunk of people who are just never going to own a home?
They're just going to be renters for the rest of their life, I guess.
Right.
Now, remember, it's election year. Mrs. Clinton is one of the candidates.
Yes.
And she mentioned that if she gets elected, she's going to put her husband in charge of
the economy. Yeah, that was interesting.
I wonder if you're going to go back to where he was a president and we had to lose money.
Yeah.
You know, trying to get more people to have more homeownership. Who knows?
I think what we're dealing with is a time of, I know everybody says this every election cycle, a time of change, but I do think there is some fundamental transformation that's been fighting to come through for a while here. And where we're going to settle out, where it's going to even out, I don't know. But in terms of homeownership, I don't know that everybody is so excited to push everybody owning a home as they once were.
At the moment, I think that's very true. At the moment, that's very true. But it's such a popular political slogan, Paul.
Oh.
You know?
Well, it makes sense.
Exactly.
Everybody gets their stake of the pie. If you don't, then you're an outsider. Then you're susceptible to following any demagogue that comes along, any populist that comes along. And in some way, Trump is the epitome of that, because all these people that feel left out of the economy, particularly in the Midwest, when jobs went overseas, they were never retrained, they never moved, the economy collapsed in Detroit, Cleveland, and other sorts of places. Those are the people, the angry people that everybody else has sort of forgotten about, that he's tapped into, and they've come back and said, he's our guy, he's going to shake things up.
But that's the whole point that he's making.
And if you, on the other hand, if they all felt they had a job and a home, they would be less susceptible to this kind of rhetoric, this kind of demagoguery, as they say.
That's very true. That's exactly what he's banking on, hoping that these people can
rise up their anger or on the left.
We talked about the Fed not raising the rates or raising the rates. One variable we never talked about is the election.
We debated that the last. I've been pushing you guys for months.
Yes,
and everybody says, it doesn't matter. Who wins?
I know the
economy
feds
goes on.
Are independent of the federal
government. Well, I know Mrs. Yellen is not voting for Mr. Trump.
You think so? You got an inside scoof on that one?
Didn't he say he was going to, like, fire her or something?
Right. Yeah, he thinks he's just going to fire her. When's her term up? 18?
1 year, 2018.
He
said once he gets 2018, he's not going to...
She's out.
For sure, she's not voting for him.
Right. So, but no, altogether, when you think about it, the election year actually brings a lot of uncertainty, especially this particular election.
Yeah.
Because we don't have an incumbent running. We have two totally different type of people running, and each is saying different things.
Two people with record unpopularity.
Exactly. So now you think, as a consumer, as a business, there is some uncertainty left.
And wouldn't that,
you know, especially
then,
small businesses, you know, they really depend on what's going to happen
so
next.
So wouldn't you
year.
Hesitate? Wouldn't you put off
definitely.
A decision until after the election? And nobody talks about this. I keep thinking this has got to be – everybody tells me – you tell me uncertainty is bad for the market. The investment show tells me uncertainty is bad for the market. We got record uncertainty now. Record uncertainty. I don't like either choice. I'm not sure what's going to come out of
this. What do you think? The stock market is not going to like Mr. Trump?
I'm not sure right now. I'm not sure.
Who they're going to like, huh?
Yeah. Exactly, because none of them, they've talked in rhetorics a lot of it, you know, trying to get votes. But none of them, neither one of the candidates are actually more specific that, hey, if I come to the office, these are A, B, C, D, this is what I'm going to do.
Well, they can say that, but they never follow through anyway.
Yeah.
So,
interestingly enough, I've read several reports. I don't know if this is continuing, but this was at least being reported here and there that Mrs. Clinton this was a few weeks ago when people were really mad about Trump. They seemed to be settling down on the Republican side a little bit, or at least deciding, okay, we're going to have to live with it. But for a while there was the never Trump, and we're going to get a third party. And she was actually going to Republican donors, and saying, you know what? If you're looking for a third candidate, I'm your third candidate. I'm more like you than he is. I'm more warlike. I'm more conservative. I'm more fiscally restrained.
Because the Republican candidates are very worried, actually. A lot of them are trying to dissociate themselves from Trump.
Oh, yeah.
They're running for office for this coming November, and they think if they get too close to Trump, they may lose that election.
So, David Brooks, the conservative columnist for the New York Times, I know that sounds like a contradiction in terms, but very respected, very well-known columnist for the Times, he said this may be a McCarthy moment. I retweeted that to everybody. In other words, like Joe McCarthy back in the 50s, if you don't disassociate yourself from this demagogue, you're going to get dragged down and smeared with him when it all explodes.
Well, you know, coming to talk about the election, I was an article, you know, the Fed John Williams said on the 22nd that says that the Fed is not going to, won't stop because of the, what do you call it?
Election.
Because of the election. And there's some data that actually says.
That's very true, though, but.
This is some statistic. I'm big in the statistic. The central bank raised the rate during the election 1984, 1988, 2000, and 2004.
There you go. Four,
and they cut the interest rate 92, 2008, and 2012. So.
What happened? I mean,
they're not going to care if there's an election. They're going to do what they think it's good for the economy.
I understand that, but
that's what he says. But then in the same article, he talks about, well, they may not care, but the economy is not booming right now.
Right, that's my whole point. Imagine they come and raise the rates. and let's just for the sake of the argument say Clinton gets elected.
Right.
And then we have an economy which is going to go into, you know,
Tailspin.
So that's
then we can blame it on her.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that candidate has some new problem to deal with. So it is, even though they are independent and they may raise it or lower it, you know, depending on their own plan, the fact that we have an election year and we don't know who's going to be elected could cause a lot of uncertainty.
And you can't tell me. I know this is this now. I'm chasing conspiracy theories, but you can't tell me that the 13 Fed governors, when they get together and talk, don't have some discussion behind closed doors about which candidate they would prefer to see based on which one they'd feel more comfortable with in office.
I think what scares a lot of people about Trump is he's unstable.
He's anything and everything you want him to be, week by week. I mean, I know I'm showing my bias.
No, I think I would like somebody who runs the country to be more stable and, like, be more polite.
Predictable.
Like the way they speak, you know, he talks like...
In one of our other shows, somebody brought this up, and I think it's a good point. If you know developers, if you know deal makers... And I think Trump himself says this, the fact that he's unpredictable is how he gets good deals. I might blow up the world. I might pull out of NATO. I might do lots of things. And because people think he's crazy, they go make a deal with him because they think he just might do that. So he sees this unpredictability as giving him leverage in a discussion.
I'm not quite sure the head of the United States would do that because you need stability.
I might not pay the debt. I just might have to go renegotiate with guys, and I'm just crazy enough to do it, so you're going to renegotiate with me.
I think he'd find it a lot harder to do it as a head of state. I see that happening, say, when the two companies negotiating.
Yeah.
But as the head of the largest economy in the world, where everybody is looking up to you and the smallest comments the Federal Reserve or the president makes a big difference in other parts of the world, I don't think you want to have that uncertainty.
So if you talk to Trump supporters, they say, yeah, he's crazy like a fox. He knows exactly. The more unpredictable he is, that's how he's going to keep everybody off balance, and that's how he's going to get what he wants.
Well, I hope that he doesn't bring more war for us. He talks more,
let's say, getting out of NATO. It's not going to be that simple. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think of Britain trying to get out of Europe, the Brexit, as they call it, and that's causing so much problem, and it's been on the books for a year now. They've been talking about it. Same thing's going to happen with.
So I'll end my point of this part of this by saying, I am shocked with all the uncertainty about the election, all the uncertainty about international affairs, all the uncertainty with our own economy. It's right there. It's going, but it's not. It's the somebody called it the three bears economy. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. It's just right there. All of this uncertainty, and yet stock market continues to rise, housing prices continue to rise, all of this continues to go in direct contrast to what I've learned, that uncertainty slows everything.
But, Paul, where would you put your money?
That's
the main reason.
There you go. You probably hit the nail on the head there.
If you have $1,000 or if you have $10 million. You don't want to put it in the bank. It doesn't pay you anything.
Nope. And let's face it, I might have to pay them to park it there.
Exactly. So you have two choices. Stock market, which many small investors, you know, $1,000, $2,000, mm-hmm. up to $20,000, $30,000 investors invest in it. It's easy. They can see what's happening.
Particularly if they've got 401k program.
Exactly.
That's their only retirement.
Or real estate.
Yeah.
If you want to invest bigger and, you know, in a different type of market. But that's, I think, the main reason. Now, think of it this way. If the bank were paying 8%, 7%, you see a lot of money being pulled out of stock market or real estate and put in the banks. It's safer, you know, retiree.
Well, it's so hard to run a business and make 8%. Are you kidding me? If you paying you 8%, many people would just park their money in the bank and sit tight.
Exactly. That's
I was in the restaurant business for many years, and the average restaurant only makes about 5%. Maybe 10, but 5 to 10% is all they can hope for in their investments.
So that's one of the reasons the market just keeps going up, and they, you know, because people, they have no other place to put
their
money.
Then the Fed can't raise rates, because then the rates will go up, and the banks will start raising interest rates, what they pay on the loans, and the economy will slow down because we all put it in the bank.
That would be the whole point. Exactly. That's why they want to raise the rates. They think there's inflation coming up, that's what they want to do.
I think they're going to stay on hold, but I'm more on your camp, Paul, that I think they, even though they don't see justification, they right. still may do it. So I'm kind of,
exactly.
I'm like somewhere between your camp
see,
and
I'm winning her over.
And Hamid's camp.
Like, Hamid's like, why do it? It's, things are going good. And I'm saying because they think something worse is coming and they want to position themselves. They want to be well positioned when that if that happens.
But that scares me. If they think yeah. something big is coming, it's like we should be, it's going to be big. If
we'll
they're going to do it.
No way to go.
To see, the Brazilian economy is in trouble. The Chinese economy is in trouble.
Yeah.
How about the Greeks? Let's talk about the Greeks.
Far-right president who wants to change. He's almost like Trump. He wants to change everything in Austria.
Yeah.
And these are some of the problems that the Fed are looking at, actually, on how it would affect us.
And it's amazing to me how Americans don't. Right now, if you went and asked them, any of those questions, do you know anything about what's going on in Brazil? They're trying to impeach the president and all this corruption coming out. Do you think China is still growing or is it a fake growth and it's going to the truth is going to come out and it's going to blow up Europe, all these other things? Most Americans just go, I don't know. I don't care.
Most Americans don't even know how our economy is actually interacted with these other economies. They don't realize that if something happens in China.
Well, because they don't talk about it in the TV.
Well, they do, but I don't think the American people are actually paying attention or paying,
I'll say what my theory always was is if you, I don't have no statistics on this, but if you ask most Americans, have you ever been out of this country? The majority of Americans have said maybe once. Not very often.
Many of them, Paul, haven't got a passport.
Yeah,
I've never.
Think so.
And I've actually met a couple of people who have never been out of California.
Yes, I do not have an active visa anymore.
Have you been outside of California?
I've been outside of California. I've been to 49 of the 50 states, so I'm unusual in that sense. Physically been there.
How
not
about
just,
outside of the U.S.?
Outside of the U.S., as much as I'm fascinated with the world interests, I've only been to Canada a couple times, Mexico a couple times. That's
Canada doesn't count. That's like U.S.
I know. That's it. Not only a couple times in both. And I've been to Ireland once. And I went to Belize once. So, whoopee, I've been out of the country not very far and not very often.
Oh, but you have the internet.
I have the internet. I read about it.
It's
like I'm there. Yeah.
It's not the same, though.
So we don't have that direct contact with the rest of the world that if you're in Europe, you've traveled, you speak three or four languages, you've been all over Europe. It's much smaller.
Well, you could go in a whole day, you could visit like five or six countries.
My perception is if you meet Asians, that they're much more interacted with all the other countries in the world there. They've traveled to Korea or to Japan or to China or whatever, Thailand and other things. That's a much more international outlook. Here, we don't even go there. Much less.
It's such a big country, Paul. Look at California. It could be the, fourth, fifth largest economy.
Right.
And the whole country is actually so big, it takes a long time to just cover the whole country.
I'll tell you how big it is. I know we're running out of time here. My favorite thing to do when I came, I've done it twice now. I drove from Michigan, which is not quite the middle of the country. It was sort of in the center. out to California, it took me 48 hours on the road at 70 miles an hour. It took me 48 of them to drive here. And the very first time I did it when I came out here after college, I got about 3 or 4 days out and I realized it's as far to California. If I turned around, it's as far back as it is forward. It was mind boggling to me to really get out and physically do it. And then I went and did it one other time when I moved my parents out here. That's just halfway. I didn't go from coast to coast. You can literally get in Santa Monica here at the pier. I always wanted to do this and take a picture of, to the left is the ocean, and you could drive that 10 all the way to the through Florida to the ocean at the other side and take a picture to the right. And that would take you like 7 days to do that. If you drove 12 hours a day, 70 miles an hour, it would take you 7 days to do that. That's a long way.
Quite a few times across the whole country. Michigan to here, I've been like five times.
Have you? So then you've done it.
I've never been through the country.
It is amazing when you get out. You think the country's crowded, and you get out into Oklahoma or the panhandle of Texas or Iowa, and you can, as far as you can see, there's nothing.
Oh, Idaho.
Idaho, nothing.
Is that what they call the boonies?
That's the boonies. That's flyover country. But it is amazing how big the country is and how far it takes to get across it.
And it's so much to cover in terms of news. A lot of times you don't actually get to cover the
No, we cover the big cities and the coast.
Exactly.
All right.
Looks like that's it for today. Thank you for listening. Make sure you check our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat, all on the OCHC Radio. If you have any questions or comments or concerns, please email us at OCHCRadio@gmail.com.
Hey, everybody. Green Eileen here. And today's green tip of the week is all about light bulbs. It seems that there are a lot more choices that are available, so I wanted to give you a little bit of a lesson, a little 1, 2, 3. So essentially, when it comes to energy-efficient light bulbs, there's three different kinds. There's halogen incandescent, and they look the most like a traditional light bulb. They're probably the least energy-efficient, but they are up to government standards. So if you like the look of a traditional light bulb, I would go with the halogen incandescent. The next is the CFLs, and those are the compact fluorescents, and those are most recognized by that whirly, swirly tube kind of thing. So they don't look like a traditional light bulb. Some people tend to not like how the kind of light that they give off, but I'd give them a second chance because they've really been working on that technology. And they're a little bit more energy efficient than the halogen incandescent. And of course, the last are the LEDs, and those have an incredible amount of range. It used to be one LED that you could get at the big box stores. Now you can get a wide variety. Some of them look like a traditional bulb. Some of they come in different colors. Now they're dimmable. And dimmable we'll actually be talking about next week. And those are the ones that last for a really long time, highly energy efficient. They are expensive than most traditional bulbs, but the prices are going down because the demand is going up. So do a little more research on your own. Go to Home Depot or Lowe's, look at the light bulb wall, find out what style and lighting fits your lifestyle best. And that is your green tip of the week from Green Eileen.